That's a double room with bath, then, sir, if you'd care to sign here.
Thank you, yes. Mr. and Mrs. Smith. And in the morning, I'd like a pot of tea, the Times, and the Telegraph.
And anything for your wife, sir?
Oh, yes. Have you got a postcard?
Ladies and gentlemen, we present Kenneth Williams, Hugh Paddick, and Joan Sims in...
No, stop messing about.
You'll be delighted to know that this week I am finally and definitely going to bring it out. So, yes, if you go round to your local bookseller...
Oh, no, you haven't written a book.
Yes, I have. Oh. And everything that's ever been inside of me has gone into it.
What is it, a medical dictionary?
No, it's my second book of poetry, Vol 2.
Oh, I never knew you'd written Vol 1.
No, that's because I wrote under a pen name.
Oh! Oh, what is your pen name, Ballpoint?
No. Fountain.
Yes, Kenneth J. Fountain. And I got the inspired title for the book from the fact that I used to get up at 6:30 in the morning to write these poems.
What's it called?
From Bed to Verse.
Good. I recently written a poem dedicated to you, Joan.
Oh, Hugh, darling, read it to me.
Oh, well, all right. If you press me.
Oh, certainly, where?
She don't care, does she? Brazen and she's forward with you.
Brazen, I'll see.
It's called A Wish for Joanie by H. Paddick.
Oh, Hugh, that was lovely.
Gets even better. I wish I was a daffodil in bloom, and then my Joan would pick me and take me to her room. In front of me, she'd lock the door while I'm in the pot. She thinks I am a daffodil. She'll soon find out I'm not.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Oh, you fool, he never wrote that. It's a straight nick from Robert Browning, that is. I know, I had it in my autograph book at school.
Oh, all right, then, if you can do better, read us one of yours.
I thought you'd never ask.
I'm already sorry I did.
Young Lil, full of great expectation, wed Fred from the RAF station. As they climbed into bed, she kissed him and said...
It's time for my bit of narration.
Your what?
My announcement. Oh. I usually announce at this point.
But you could have ruined my reputation as a poet.
I suspect, Mr. Williams, I may well have saved it. Now it's Crackerjack and Ori with Mother Time, and with her storybook under one arm and her collapsible bed under the other, it is Mary Maud Nethersole.
Hello, tinies, and biggies too. Last night, I was looking at something simply enormous. A map of Africa. So here is a story from the African veldt. Once there was a porcupine called Hilda who wanted to be a bunny girl. So she said to her mother, "Hi, little bunny, little bunny, you want to see your mama bunny now?" "Rubbish," said her mother. "Your ears aren't big enough. And think how absurd you'd look in fishnet tights with all those quills sticking through. Now go out and find a little friend to play with. And this time put your glasses on." As she said this because Hilda had spent the previous day trying to make friends with a prickly pear. And couldn't understand why he never came up to scratch. Now, there aren't many games that porcupines can play. Leapfrog is out of the question. Likewise, by sardines. So she forgot her dreams of becoming a bunny girl. Instead, she got a job as a waitress in Cardiff, where she's very happy serving Welsh rabbits. But now, our song. Here's one I learned on safari while tracking a bison. With no luck, I'm afraid, so we all had to wash in the bucket. And some young Zulu once met such a Lulu, the prettiest he'd ever known. She was wearing one bead in a place where you need rather more than one bead on its own. So they walked by the wide Zambezi, and she said when her eyes met his, "Don't start acting too free and easy, 'cause that bead's gonna stay where it is." So he talked to her mother, her father, her brother, and shortly he made her his bride. Her marital price was a large bag of rice and a goat which was slightly boss-eyed. But soon after he asked for a refund and explained to her dad with a cough, "Although she looks fine with her bead on, she looks dreadful when she takes it off."
And so we come to our regular feature, Feeble Fables, stories with a moral.
My name is Edgar Allan Chambers. I'm landlord of the village inn. It all started one dark and stormy night when suddenly a pretty girl opened and a door walked in.
"Good evening. Could you give me a room and a bath?"
"Well, I don't know about a room, but get your clothes off and I'll start the water running."
"Landlord, I wish to take accommodation while I search for my missing brother, Norman Jervis."
"Norman Jervis? Did you say Norman Jervis?"
"Yes."
"Ah, good. That means my hearing aid is working." "Ah, yeah, well, the batteries have been a bit dodgy."
"Tell me, old man, do you know of him?"
"Ah, and he was last seen alive walking up the hill to the castle."
"Can you take me there?"
"Oh, the castle? Oh, 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 none. None of us terrified villagers goes near the castle. Professor Baskerville lives up there conducting his ghastly experiments.
There's weeping and wailing.
And things that go bump in the night."
"What things?"
"Well, I'm not sure, but I think the professor falls out of bed a lot."
"And you'd weep and wail as well if you kept falling out of bed."
"I am not afraid. Oh. I shall go up to the castle and seek out my brother." As I made my way up to the castle, it was lucky I had my plastic pixie hood, which I had borrowed from a plastic pixie in our front garden at home in England. At last, I arrived at the massive mahogany wood front door and knocked. After what seemed an eternity, the huge door creaked open. And there, before me stood the butler, a menacing giant of a man, with strange glazed eyes and massive shoulders. He spoke.
"Hello." "Yeah, if you're one of those people selling life insurance, you come to the wrong place."
"I'm looking for my brother, Norman Jervis."
"Norman Jervis? That name rings a bell." "Yes, see, I told you, indeed. It also means the professor is calling me."
"Where is the professor?"
"Follow me."
He led me across the vast marble hallway, our footsteps echoing in this dank and eerie atmosphere. He opened a small mahogany door, which led to a long, narrow, paneled passage, lit only by shafts of moonlight filtering through the creaking shutters. Then another door. And another. And we continued up a flight of uncarpeted stairs, which led on and on and on until we finally reached a flight of carpeted stairs. In the silence, I pondered upon the mysterious disappearance of my brother Norman Jervis until another door. And we were walking along a stone balcony, the stillness of the night disturbed only by the occasional hooting of an owl. Another door. And we began to climb a spiral staircase. Onward and onward, upward and upward, until finally we saw in front of us the door of the laboratory, and the butler stopped and said...
And you always talk to yourself when you're walking alone.
The laboratory.
There you go, you're talking to yourself again.
Oh, sorry. Professor, I am Felicity Jervis. What have you done with my brother Norman?
Miss Jervis, your brother Norman is dead. I killed him.
Oh, but why? Why? Was it to use his body with one of your fiendish experiments? Was it in the cause of so-called science? Was it to use various parts of his person to help to build an inhuman monster to add to your army of the living dead who will activate your plan to one day rule and dominate the world? Is that why you killed him? Is it?
Well, no, not really. I just didn't like him very much.
Professor, I wish to take his body back to England so that he can be interred in the Jervis family tomb.
Certainly, my dear. And if you're in any sort of a hurry, my butler will dig up the coffin immediately.
And the moral of this week's story is... Here, hang on. There isn't one. There's no moral.
No moral?
No, quick, Douglas. Think of something to say. Anything.
Norman Jervis will be exhumed as soon as possible. Now, problem corner.
My name is Clarence J. Mell's partner, and I think I'm going...
You better just come.
I haven't finished. I think I'm going out of my mind on account of the problem I've got. It's more than a man can bear.
What is it?
Static electricity in my private life. Yes, it is. And it's very upsetting for my lady wife, too. I mean, put yourself in her position.
I'd rather not.
No one minds a little shock now and then, but when it comes to sparks...
Have you had yourself properly earthed?
Earthing's no good. Wear gumboots, they said, and always keep one foot on the floor. Oh. I mean, not contortionist, am I? There's times when you can't.
There must be, yeah.
Oh, you try having a bath in gumboots, keeping one foot on the floor. And the other boot gets full of water.
If I asked you if you knew the cause of all this, I suppose you'd say the answer was in the negative.
No, I wouldn't. It's caused by wearing man-made fibres. So now all my garments come from a factory which only employs women.
Oh. Does that help?
Does a bit, yes.
But now I've got another little problem.
Oh, dear, what's that?
Oh, I feel such a fool in a see-through nighty.
Statistics tell us that more and more people are spending their Sunday afternoons gardening. But what about the people without gardens? Well, they just have to amuse themselves indoors. And one way is by raising indoor plants. For example, take Sid and Rita Dipfinger.
Sid? I'm a bit worried about my floribunda exotica monster rosa, dear.
Well, we're none of us perfect, Rita. As a matter, I rather like it.
No, dear, I mean that pot plant in the hall. I think I've been overfeeding it. Mm. I should never have given it that slice of treacle pudding. And I don't like the look of that cactus much either.
I've never liked the look of that cactus. It's not very nice, Rita. Would you put some clothes on it?
Well, I tried knitting it a vest here, but I couldn't get it on because of the prickle. I'll tell you what, I'll shove it behind the Busy Lizzie, then you won't notice it.
Well, the Busy Lizzie will. She's busy enough already sharing a pot with your wandering sailor. Well... put him in the bedroom alongside your old maid's folly.
Oh! Oh, not while he's putting out tendrils, dear. I wouldn't feel safe in me bed.
You never do, except when I'm working night.
Oh, oh, don't start me off! Oh. Oh, I'll forget what I'm talking about.
Oh, who wants to talk?
Seriously, look about my floribunda exotica monster rosa. I think you ought to know that I had to fetch the doctor round yesterday.
Oh, Richard, it hasn't bitten the postman again.
No, dear, no, but the fact is, Sid, he did a few tests and we're going to have to turn the spare room into a nursery.
Now our song spot. I'm sure you'll agree that some singers can transform a mere song into a sublime artistic experience. But some can't. To prove my point, here is the maxi-length Harris Male Voice Choir.
It's boner to open up your ear and sing.
It's boner to hear the only voices ring.
In harmony.
And a big thank you to all fans who've sent in tokens of their esteem, especially Mrs. Winifred Hoist of Crouch End.
Oh, ever so windy for the homemade cokes.
Lay louder, dear. Louder, in case you've got a red in the oven.
Oh, yes. Top of the cakes, Win Love. What a dainty thought.
Dainty.
Yes, very. Six maids of honour with our names writ on in ball points.
Excuse me.
Oh, hello. I thought she was having a lay down on the roof and dropped off.
Not at all.
Oh.
But when you start singing, I'll probably be glad to jump.
Oh, Mistress Quickly, straight out the Merry Wives of Windsor. Okay. That is your actual classical joke. I'm not just a pretty face.
Oh, that is quite obvious. Yeah. What are you going to sing?
Chuck, this week we've got a little offering from the ballet Sylvia by Delibes.
Delibes!
Just a bit staccato bit.
That'll be plenty.
Oh, oh, he's old. Don't want the offering.
A little bit of pizzicato, please. On strings,
is one of almost everybody's favourite things.
You couldn't have a pizzicato played on brass.
There's far too much vibrato in the brass for pizzicato sound.
So pizzicato, we no need a violin.
You also need an eek that has a nice big chin.
Beneath which you can tuck it.
And a hand so you can pluck it.
If you have it, why forget it, because it can't begin.
Oh,
I said
it was lovely. Beautiful. Yes. Yes.
Thank you. It's time for the Smith Report. This week's topic, crime. Should there be a law against it? What does the man in the street have to say?
Well, I think the British government ought to nationalise crime. It's the only way to make sure it doesn't pay.
So much for public opinion, but what are the views of an expert?
As a high court judge presiding over the Outer London Court of Sessions, I have recently been involved in a case which upset me tremendously. It was the case of a peeping Tom, a man who ran up and down the beach at Bognor, suddenly opening the doors of bathing huts in the hope of seeing the bronzed, gleaming thighs. There's a pretty young girl's fleshing in the summer sunshine. Very unfortunate case, and I got 6 months.
Criminals are in a class of their own. They have their own customs, their own jargon, even their own pop music. And here is the criminal's top five.
Hi there, pocket pickers. Straight into number five comes the great mailbag robbers, and isn't it a lousy day to be caught in the train? Still at number four, Jellic Night and Day by the Safe Blowers. Up 16 places this week to a fantastic number three, the Prison Officers Association sing, "Oh, oh, oh, what a lovely water." Pushed from last week's top place in this week's number two, a protest song from Boozy Driver, "Police, Release Me, Let Me Go." And here it is, this week's number one, this week's Top of the Cop Chops from Klepto and the Maniacs.
I kill your housewives every day. Pick up a can of beans and say,
"Honest, I meant to pay for it. I just forgot it was in the advert."
Statistics tell us that the majority of crimes are committed by men, but throughout history there have been many infamous women, and we have in the studio the original sinner of them all, Eve. Here she is, talking to our reporter, Fife McFinger Exercise.
Now, Eve, you don't mind if I call you by your first name? Don't mind.
Well, you haven't got a lot of choice, really, have you?
No, no. Now, this sin that you committed, what exactly did you do?
I ate an apple.
Oh, I see.
I was the original, you know. I did it first, and nowadays everybody's at it. Eating apples all over the place.
But what is wrong with eating apples?
Well, you just think about the well-known saying, an apple a day keeps the doctor away. There's more to that than meets the eye. And the other phrase is, I've had a skinful. And have a nibble.
Yes, quite. And what happened to you when you ate the apple?
Oh, it was terrible. Oh. Me and my hubby were evicted from this lovely garden where we lived, and we had to put on fig leaves and...
Yes, that's always puzzled me. Why particularly fig leaves?
Well, you try it with stinging nettles and see how you feel.
Well, stop Messing About with Kenneth Williams, Hugh Paddock, Joan Sims, and the Max Harris Group. The script was by Miles Rodge and David Cumming and Derek Collier. The producer was John Simmons.
Of course, they're back next week at the same time. Series 2 continues with an exposure of BBC Radio. Sounds intriguing. That's Stop Messing About next Friday at 8 a.m.